Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, episode 70.
All the flesh away from the bone. Everything. They don't throw nothing away. They use the jowls and the muscles and the eyes and the ligaments and everything. For the nose and the gums and all the flesh, and they boil it down into a big jelly of fat.
Wow, I didn't know that's what was in that stuff.
It's really good. You like it?
Nothing to be scared of.
Are you sure? How?
I killed him.
You can't kill the boogeyman.
Get in there, come on, Tommy. Now lock the door!
Hello and welcome to the Plain Label Podcast. I am your host, Eric Williams, and along with me is my good friend and co-host, Rachel Zelag.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
And in this episode, we have a lot of shit going on. First of all, we are welcoming...
It's a spooky episode!
Yeah, we are welcoming our new theme of horror movies. And, it, you know, it's October, we figured we would return to some horror films.
Horror.
And horror, not horror films. And since it is, you know...
There might be a little bit of that in these two.
It's episode 70, and so this episode we're going to focus on the 70s. And horror films. That's right. And horror films that are made in the 70s. And we're not alone, as people can figure out by the little stepping on me that they were trying to do there. We are joined by returning guest, Mr. Cameron Rice.
Hello.
And that's not all, as we are also joined by returning guest, Miss Annelle Strauss.
Hello.
Now, for this, as for the films we're going to be discussing, we are going to talk about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Suspiria, and Halloween. Before getting into our discussion, we would like to mention that we are proud members of the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. So, Mrs. Zelag, drink roll call. What do you have for us?
Well, it's one of my favoritest times of the year because when all the pumpkin beers come out and I get to drink all of them.
All of the pumpkin beers? That's your drink for tonight?
Well, I wish. Right now I'm having a Goose Island Oktoberfest and it is just magical.
Mmm.
And that's all I got right now.
Cruiser, are you going to Oktoberfest this year?
I think this will be my sixth year in a row going to Oktoberfest.
So stupid question.
Yes, you should totally show up. It's amazing.
Yeah, it sounds
it's
good.
Like Christmas, you just run around and be ridiculous.
I heard the advertisement saying that it also offers you a free ride home.
You have to fist fight for the cab, so it's better to just like have somebody ready to come get you, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Well, you guys don't have Uber out there?
Oh, we have Lyft, which is the same thing, but I don't know if they'll drive out to the Lancaster Event Center.
Yeah. Shit's spread out around these parts, Cameron.
Bastards.
How about you, Mr. Rice? What are you having?
Well, I'm performing in a show in 2 hours, so drinking alcohol is currently not on the table. But to stay in the Halloween spirit, I'm having cinnamon apple tea.
Oh.
Apples are Halloween-y.
I guess so. I guess that works.
That's true.
Strauss, what are you having?
Red Bull vodka.
Red Bull vodka. Way to get in the Halloween spirit, asshole.
We had a pumpkin beer with dinner.
That's true. See, there you go.
Yeah.
And what else do you have in Strauss?
I have a backup glass of wine, you know.
That's right.
So I don't have to get up or anything. It's ready.
Were you a Girl Scout?
I should have been.
Yeah. Should have got her drinking badge?
I am a mom, you know, I'm prepared.
Prepared.
Perfect. I am having a Red Bull vodka also.
Nice. So
it's all fallish over here with the Red Bull vodka.
I have this drink that I want to try, but I'm afraid that I'll die of alcohol poisoning. It's Apple Rita and Fireball. But I feel like that's just a horrible idea.
Ooh, Fireball.
Yeah.
Here you go. Yep. Now Cameron's speaking Rachel's language right there.
All right, that's all I got.
Okay, well, let's move on to our first film. We're going chronologically, believe it or not. And we're starting with 1974's film, and it is called The Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
En route to visit their grandfather's grave, which has apparently been ritualistically desecrated, five teenagers drive past a slaughterhouse, pick up and quickly drop a sinister hitchhiker, eat some delicious home-cured meat at a roadside gas station, before ending up at the old family home, where they're plunged into a never-ending nightmare as they meet a family of cannibals who more than make up in power tools what they lack in social skills. That might be one of my favorite ones so far.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, that was good.
That is good.
So little misleading, but sure.
So this was my selection. And my history with this film is fairly brief, actually. Like, I saw it in 2011 for the Movies a Day
challenge. Oh.
And that was the first time I'd seen it. I had heard of it a lot. You know, I'd heard of it and all of the sequels and remakes and all of that sort of thing, but I hadn't actually sat down and watched it before. And, you know, I knew of Leatherface, and I knew that, you know, obviously the title of the film. So I figured it was just going to be a guy just slaughtering people.
Massacring with a chainsaw.
Yeah. That's what in Texas, that's what I had figured it was. And so when I watched it for the first time, I was like genuinely scared at the oddity of it.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't so much the gore or the lack of gore in this film's case, actually. It was just how odd everything was in the surrounding area.
Yeah.
You know, just like everyone was just a little dirty and a little weird.
Sweaty and disgusting. And
it just looked like no place that I'd ever want to be.
Right.
but yeah, so that's why I picked
it. Sounded like Texas.
I've been to Texas a lot, but it wasn't like
I actually wrote, I'm surprised this wasn't the Iowa Chainsaw Massacre.
That's true, yeah. So let's see, Cameron, let's go to you. What's your history with this film?
Oh, well, my history with all three of these films, and actually a number of the films we're going to be talking about later in the month. So growing up, like, I think like I had all kinds of different genres thrown on me living with my mom, my dad, and my aunt. But they were all like comedy or classic Hollywood and all this other stuff. And so it's like horror was like my thing that I created for myself, as it were, like my own genre niche thing that I was into. So I used to check out horror films from the library. So I saw all the Friday the 13th, the Nightmare on Elm Street films, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I think the first time I saw this must have been 10 or 11. And this was one of those things where I look back when I was a kid, and I was a real pushy kid because I used to like tell my friends like, we're watching this, when they thought we were playing video games. And
here's what you're watching, little kid.
Yeah, but they were my age. I just remember like this movie, it's freaky because it feels, it's not a documentary. It's clearly a movie. It's not like a Blair Witch thing, but there's a sense of reality to it. And then when you read about the making of the movie, you understand why everything feels dirty, hot, and gross. Mm-hmm. Because while they were making it, they all felt miserable and it was dirty, hot, and gross.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Reading about the making of the movie reminds me a lot of the making of Evil Dead.
Oh yeah,
where it's just like
terrible time. Sure.
Oh, this group of people just trying to make their indie film, and it was either the best time of your life, depending on who you're talking to who made the movie, or the worst experience ever in the world.
like the hitchhiker that wanted to fight Toby Hooper.
Yes, the hitchhiker that wanted to fight Toby Hooper. The fact that, I think this is a major thing, the whole last sequence, the dinner table sequence, from the, obviously her waking up tied to the chair to the very end of her jumping out the window, they filmed all that in one day, and it took between, depending on who you believe, 28 to 36 hours nonstop.
Yeah, and that dude that was in the makeup who was younger than the guy that played Leatherface's dad.
Yes.
That was supposed to be the grandpa, and he had all that makeup on him.
Yeah.
All that time.
And that's why they did it all in one day, is because the guy who played the grandfather did not want to put the makeup on, like do the makeup thing again for another day. And the man who played the cook was under contract only for a week, so they were going to lose him the next day. And it was 110 degrees normal, let alone with film lights and everything.
Yeah. And they were talking about how they couldn't change the outfit that Leatherface had on, so it smelled awful, and you know, he'd been wearing it for however many days straight, and it just sounded like a terrible experience.
Yeah, none of the clothes were ever clean because they were worried about continuity.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Sheds a whole new light on my experience in the movie.
So yeah, point being, love the film.
I think smelled actually did smell.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
it's true.
So my point being, love the movie.
Yeah. With all that being said, Strauss, you're a newbie to this one, correct?
Yeah, this is my first time seeing the original, but I definitely grew up seeing the ones that I thought were the original, because I thought the 80s one was the original one.
Yeah, which I believe is probably the sequel.
Is that with Matthew McConaughey?
No.
Well, that's part four. That's awful. No. That is a terrible film.
No. There was one that my mom showed me when I was younger, and I just remember loving it. And she also showed me Halloween, but I think it was the sequel too.
Mm. And so when we put this on, you know, it came on.
I was super excited about it.
Yeah, and she's like, what is this?
This isn't the wonderful childhood film I remember.
Right?
Yeah. Well, because let me say, part two is, it's the same director, it's Toby Hooper. It's a pure 80s movie. It's a fun ride.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has Oingo Boingo music, the whole deal.
Yay!
Yeah, so one of my first notes here is, I wanted to ask everyone this, is does the, quote, true story aspect of this, you know, the opening crawl there, does that make it more scary to you in general? Like, not necessarily when you're watching it now, like when you watch The Conjuring or Annabelle or whatever, but when you watched a movie younger and you saw based on a true story, like The Exorcist or like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, is that something that you actually bought into and believed and was like, holy shit, like this is way scarier than these other movies that are just obviously made up?
Well, when I was little, like, contrary to Cameron, I don't think I remember watching any scary movies, like, at my house. Like, I think that the Cruz family house was a bunch of sunshine and goddamn rainbows, because, like, I don't remember, like, I remember watching a scary movie at my friend's, but, like, I don't remember ever having, like, but the whole true story, when we went to see, I'm almost embarrassed to admit this, what was that one where they put the video camera in the bedroom because there's a demon in there?
Paranormal?
Yeah.
First, I thought you were talking about Vacancy.
To make sure that that wasn't a true story. Because that kind of freaked me out.
Oh, my God.
No, that first Paranormal Activity is good, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was. That's not
what the embarrassing part is, Eric.
Just saying.
And I guess it was like the guy, they moved into an old house and it used to creak all the time. And so like he got this fun idea. I guess you could call it fun idea. And so like I had to Google that on the way home from that.
Well, it's interesting. It's very interesting. The true story. So to answer your question, does the whole like, is it a true story now? Of course not. Cause every true story, it's like that. It's like there was a creak in the house and I was
right.
like, ooh.
Yeah, now
and
I
so
just
I'm
my eyes when I hear this was.
Yeah. I wrote a movie about a boogeyman. So. Bagul. But with this, like, that wasn't a thing that came up all the time. So in horror movies, it's like, based on true story, especially 70s film, you're like, what the fuck? being who I am, I had to look it up. This, the true story, I don't know if you're gonna get into this, Eric, but the true story is Ed Gein, the killer Ed Gein.
Yeah, in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm.
Ed Gein is also the basis for Buffalo Bill and Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
And Norman Bates.
Mm.
Yeah. So
that, there's a guy. People
See,
who.
I kind of thought of that. Sorry to interrupt you, but like when she went up to the attic and there's like those half dead people sitting there, I was like, oh, that's kind of Bates-ish.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Anyway.
So people who say there's no more creativity, just pick one serial killer and create three completely different franchises.
Sure.
There you go.
It's true. That's true. What about you, Strauss? Does it make you.
Oh, yeah. Even though I saw the 80s version, I still was like, is this real? Really? And then my mom, of course, didn't have, like, a real sound answer for me, but she was like, well, I think there was a story that, I don't know, probably some creepy guy killed someone, and I was like, okay, well, so it's real. So, yeah, I was totally freaked out.
Yeah, I don't know. And
but it wasn't in Texas.
She didn't have, like,
it was in Colorado.
Research. She didn't, like, research on the internet for me and tell me a real answer, so she just,
yeah,
like,
I don't
my
know.
Imagination
yeah. She doesn't have a real authoritative tone when it comes to facts, either, so it's like, mm-mm. Oh, well, I don't, it's
and
not real,
sunshines
sweetie.
And rainbows.
Yeah. Let's just look at this pretty light over here. That's kind of more the way that it was.
Shiny.
that's probably 90s internet research, too. Probably took 18 hours just to find one name.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, my God. I would have lied, too.
Mm-hmm. So one of the other – go ahead, Cameron.
Well, I think the thing – because here's the interesting thing about Texas Chainsaw to me is it just had its 40th anniversary. I got that Blu-ray set.
Oh,
Let me tell you,
too.
It looks fucking gorgeous. But the thing about it is, like, why does this film stand out above all the other grimy exploitation kind of films? And that's the thing. Like, when this film was being made, again, like, comparing it to Evil Dead, the people making it thought, like, well, this will be a calling card film. It might play in, like, some drive-thrus.
Mm-hmm.
And no one was going to see it. And then it turned into a phenomenon. Texas Chainsaw is a film, like, you hear Ridley Scott talk about that he rewatched Texas Chainsaw a bunch of times before making Alien.
Right, yeah.
To try to understand, like, why does this movie creep into you and get under your skin? And Alien doesn't have obviously any hillbillies or anything like that, but it's all about the atmosphere and the how it's shot, and this film is edited like a motherfucker.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. I was waiting for you to continue.
Yeah, I thought you were.
My bad. But I think it's also the sound. Like, I love the sound in this film. I love the camera sound effect.
Mm-hmm.
That real creepy kind of sound effect.
Oh, yeah.
That really upset a friend of mine when we were little. So when we'd spend the night at his house, we would do that at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Of course you would.
And he'd get really pissed.
Yeah, one of the things that I really liked about it was I liked how when, when you have the crazy hitchhiker gets picked up and he's super crazy. Like, why would you pick him up, really? You know?
But it was the 70s. That's what you did.
Right, I guess and I so. Have to remind myself of that, too. I'm like, no one would ever pick up anyone off the side of the road in Texas holding, a raccoon purse around his neck, like.
but it was funny. Like, this movie had the effect that, you know, you always hear, like, Psycho made people afraid to take showers, Jaws scared people away from the ocean. In the 70s, hitchhiking, picking up people hitchhiking or hitchhiking yourself was a huge thing. Mm-hmm. And this was a movie that made people go, I'm never picking up anyone again.
Well, good.
Yeah, good.
No kidding. So I like when he gets in the van, and we have the, what's the handicapped man's
Franklin.
Name? Franklin. We have
Yeah, him. Franklin.
Yeah. Oh, Franklin. When he came on, I did that. Oh, this fucking guy.
Right?
But, you know.
Well, that's not what you said.
Well, I said something like that, though.
Yeah.
What'd he say?
He said, fucking wheelchair fuck.
Yeah, fucking wheelchair fuck. That's what I said.
I had to write it down.
In the notes.
Yep.
It was close. That was close. So anyway, what I like when he is on there, and it's like, oh yeah, this is a good idea to pick him up. And then as soon as he's in there, everyone's looking at him like, oh shit. Like, this is not the good idea right here. And I love that Tobe Hooper just kind of lets a lot of the scenes have plenty of space to where you're just like dwelling in this world of like stickiness and creepiness. And it's not a lot of quick cuts. It's just, you're just sitting there.
Yeah.
Just
I call that what the fuck time.
Yes.
What I called that during this movie.
All right.
You like head cheese.
Yeah. And then they sit there and while you're watching it, you go, what the fuck? Like that. Like it's just, yeah.
And as soon as he cuts himself, why didn't they start freaking out? Only did they freak out when he starts cutting someone else.
Yeah.
Like,
it's the 70s, man.
And he has, like, a Mary Poppins kind of purse on the animal purse, because he just has 72 things in there that he can take out. Giant camera and...
Well, let's also not ignore his giant red birthmark.
Yeah.
Is that what that was? See, I couldn't tell if it was a birthmark or a scar.
Yeah, I think it was. I agree with Cameron. I think it was a birthmark. Either way, it was creepier. I mean, just they looked for the creepiest guy they could find ever. And
well, the actor that plays the hitchhiker actually does voiceover work. He's a voiceover artist, and he said that he based this character off of his nephew who has diagnosed schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that my nephew's not violent, nothing like that, but his facial expressions were the same and very like, do you want to see something kind of a thing.
I feel like if they were going to try to remake this in a casting everyone the same sort of look sort of way, that this guy would have to be James Franco, because I kept seeing him going, oh, it's like scuzzy 70s James Franco.
Jim Franco.
Jim Franco. That's his grown up. That's what he goes by when he's grown up. But that's what he looked like to me.
I could see it.
So there you go.
Alright.
Let's see. Oh, I put that I love that how 70s the film is. Just with the fashion, like the sort of exploitation of the handicapped. They have to have like the handicapped character and just the overall sort of look to where how everything is. It just, like, a low-budget 70s film looks much different to me than a low-budget 80s film.
Yeah.
Because they were mostly shot at 16mm, just the film stock alone.
Yeah.
Like, completely different beast. I think there's also something to the fact that it's, like, it's not just the family that's weird. Like, it's almost like they entered this bizarro world.
Yes.
Like, the guy cleaning the window doesn't talk. There's a drunk guy in a tire. It's like, you never know. Yeah, it's, like, graveyard, like... It's like they entered this crazy, bizarro world, but there's something about it that, like, you know, it's very obvious if you watch Rob Zombie adores this film and just tries to completely remake the film.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is like, Rob Zombie doesn't ever have the five kids, the five normal people. Everyone's crazy.
Yeah.
So there's something about this film that I don't know if it's because of it's the 16mm, it's the way it's shot, or I think it's the fact that Tobe Hooper, it's very interesting to look at Tobe Hooper's career, because Tobe Hooper never really made a film this subtle again. Like, and it's funny to say Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a subtle film, but it is. I mean, it takes its time. It's only like an hour and a half, but it takes its time. And it really lets you live in this world. And he would then go on to do Texas Chainsaw 2 and Poltergeist and Life Force and movies that kind of had a bit of cheese to them and like silliness. Oh yeah, big head cheese. He made The Mangler about a possessed laundromat press.
Mm-hmm. Sounds
so
great.
It's not. but it's very interesting. I think. And it's that subtleness that kind of makes this world feel real. You're not watching it going like, I don't buy any of this right away. Like, there is a part of you that's like, this feels like it's true. Like, these people exist.
I know. I got actually a True Detective vibe, actually, from this. Like, at the end of True Detective, I was like, Brad, you probably go off a highway somewhere onto a dirt road and these people are there. And like, that's what I got out of this too, rewatching it after I, you know, burned through that whole HBO series. I'm like, this probably could like be a thing somewhere down in the bowels of Texas.
Yeah, it definitely feels that way. One of the things that I really liked was that I think this goes along with what Cameron was saying about it being real, was that when our main character gets, I believe it's our main character, or maybe it's the short shorts girl, but we get into the bone room.
Oh, that's the short shorts girl gets in. She gets in there right before he grabs her. That's right.
We get into that room, and I love how there's no real sense of the room. There's like not an establishing shot. There's not some sort of wide shot to where we see, oh, okay, here's one wall, here's another, here's what this side of the wall looks like. You know, you have no real idea of the room. So when she's kind of stumbling around and the camera's kind of following her, like you're confused, she's confused, like it's a real disconcerting scene. So I really like that.
Well, and then there's a chicken hanging from like a cage, and you hear that. Like, that's the other thing that I think that's interesting to say about this movie is, in opposition to Halloween, there's not really a score.
Oh yeah,
like there's kind of sound effects and there's a little bit of a score, but for the most part, like a perfect example of a scene is like when the main character finally gets out of the house. She jumps out of the window, and the hitchhiker and Leatherface come running out, and it's just this long shot from down the driveway of them running after her. And most films would probably have like a score, dun 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 kind of a thing. It's just the sounds of nature.
Yeah.
And that makes it super creepy.
Well, I also thought that there was a lot of, not a lot of setup when someone's killed.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just like someone goes. Yeah, it's like just someone goes in and boom, you're dead. And that's much more scary to me than like, you know, you open three doors and none of them, there's no one behind, and then the fourth one, there's someone behind there and they kill you. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I've seen that a lot more. But when, you know, he goes in there and Leatherface just just comes out and bashes him over the head and then pulls him behind the steel door and shuts it.
Yeah.
You're like, holy fuck, like what the hell is going on?
And also that steel door was a good touch, because I was like, what the fuck? Like, there's some crazy shit going on enough that you have to install a steel door in here.
Because it's supposed to make it feel like the slaughterhouse. Like, there's the ramp where the cows would walk up.
Oh, God. It was, anyway.
Yeah, and you could hear a pig squealing.
Yeah, you could hear it. Yeah, there was some kind of animal sound.
Weird, but the Leatherface talks in, like, the highest pitched voice ever, so... I don't know.
I don't know if I call that talking.
Yeah. Well, he's probably gotten beaten his whole life.
Or something. Cameron, did you see...
feeling sorry for Leatherface right now?
No, I'm saying that's probably why he doesn't speak.
Don't make excuses for him.
He got beat every time he spoke. That's all I'm saying.
The psychology major is trying to...
Look what you did to the damn door!
Yeah.
But
I think actually, before we move on from feeling sorry for Leatherface, I think it is interesting in reading about this movie, and this isn't something obviously you notice maybe the first couple times you see it, but once I read it, it seems it's actually a pretty genius move, and it's something that's there or it's not there, it doesn't really matter, but the fact that when Gunnar Hansen got the role of Leatherface, back in the 70s, you could stay retarded and it wasn't a problem. They basically said, you're playing a retarded person. And he goes, okay, well, how do I go about doing that? What's the motivation of this character? And they said, well, you basically are a 2-year-old child. Imagine how a 2-year-old child would feel if all these strangers suddenly came into his house.
Oh.
And it's the fact that these people are in his house. Because if you watch, after he puts the, after he kills the guy with the glasses, mm-hmm. He suddenly like, and he dumps the girl back in the ice chest, he runs to the window and starts looking around.
Right.
So it's a very interesting, and it's not feeling sorry for Leatherface, but it's almost adding just enough motivation beyond like, oh, these are crazy people and that's it.
Well, yeah, I like the fact that it's not like, ooh, my evil plan is working perfectly.
He was like manipulated to do those things by his father.
By his, yeah.
Or whoever the...
But he's only the cook, because he doesn't have the stomach.
Exactly, yeah.
I can't do no killing.
He makes his slower child do it for him.
Yeah.
The whole thing is just...
One of the things that I want to make sure and mention, I don't know if Anel has this written down, but how about the big, like, sausage link hanging out of Franklin's mouth?
Right?
Which is probably a finger. To be honest.
Something, yeah.
Probably something.
Something not... Yeah, I was like, is that meat? What is that? Like,
what is it?
Because, I mean, like... So, I mean, and this is so horror movie-esque, but, like, most of their decisions were poor ones in this movie, and... The biggest one, one of the biggest ones, I think, was getting barbecue at a gas station.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The only thing worse would be sushi gas station.
Right?
Yeah. I was like, is that barbecue? Hmm. No. It's fried people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which they really explore in the sequel, which is great.
Yes.
Because they win barbecue contests.
Yep, they do. Right.
That's good. One of the other things that I had written down is I think that it's interesting to me, and I like the fact that Leatherface is a little chubby. Like, I like that he's a bigger guy, and I don't know why. I think that just is, like, more...
Well, it adds to the, I think, what we're talking about, which is, like, he's supposed to be, like, childlike in a way. Like, that's the difference between this and the remake, where the remake, they hired Andrew Berlowski, who's, like, a big fucking bodybuilder football-looking dude. And so... It adds to the fact that, like, you, like, Leatherface being, like, 6'6", but, like, a Mack truck of a guy, but who's also big and can move, adds intimidation as opposed to, like, imagining, I guess he's doing bench presses in the basement.
Sure, yeah.
Really working the rack, you know what I mean?
That's what I like, especially at the end, you know, when she's driving away and he's swinging around the chainsaw, and it's just, like, this little fat upset kid.
Right, like throwing a fit.
Yeah, just throwing a fit. It's not a bodybuilder going, ah, I'm gonna get you, you know. He's just like, ah, damn it, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I thought I like the fact that he's a little bit tubbier. And it makes a little bit more sense that he can't chase down the limping girl.
Yeah.
Right.
Catch her.
Yeah.
Can't limber through the trees.
Which, you know, that's another thing in the IMDb that she cut herself to shit running through those sticks.
I'm sure.
And so that a lot of that blood that's on her clothes is her actual blood.
And I'm sure her hair really did get stuck.
And they said that, you know, when they cut her finger for Grandpa to suck on, that they actually cut her finger.
I was going to say that, and what, you know, never mind. Nobody's going to explain to me what that was all about because you can't. So let's just move on.
You've seen vampire movies, right?
But they're not vampires. They're just weird.
You just gotta go there.
Is that they like the taste, and old man mothers doesn't have teeth.
Ugh, that just made my stomach hurt. Watching, like, suckle on her.
Like, yeah, like an old man getting very.
And the
aroused,
fact that he's moving his little hands, like he's like a baby.
Trying to, like, help him hit her over the head. Please.
Get him, Grandpa! Get her!
Oh, yeah, and it just keeps dropping it.
Yeah.
Finally, the big guy is just like, okay, I'll do it.
The worst part
you.
About it, yeah, is when they bash her once.
I know! And then oh, God.
It's like, here, I got you one. Now you hit her. She's kind of dazed.
But let us talk about the satisfaction of the hitchhiker getting hit by the truck.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
How good is that?
Like, that is, Eric, this is the opposite of your I want bummer endings, because she gets away. Mm-hmm. The Eric Williams ending would have been like, and then they suck her dry and she's dead in the house.
Right.
Credits. But the people we want to see get fucking killed get really fucking killed.
Yeah.
And she barely gets away.
Yeah, I almost wanted that hitchhiker guy to die more than the chainsaw guy. Because I think he was way creepier.
Right.
Well, it's the fact that it's like, he's a piece of shit. Like, at least, like, with Leatherface, because he's, like, not all there, there's a part of you that's like, ugh, well, he cut up his leg. But this other guy is like, he's human garbage. Apparently believes in voodoo by burning the photo. He covers their van in blood. And then he's yelling at the cook, being like, you don't do shit! You're just a cook! And you're like, oh, God, I hate him. I hate him so much.
Yeah, I think that's exactly nail on the head. Like, he has the potential. I mean, obviously, given his circumstances, he probably wouldn't do a whole lot. But, you know, probably more than what he's decided to do.
And then watching those dummy legs get hit by a truck. Oh, it is so satisfying.
So I have a question. The guy gets out of that truck, and she gets in, and they sneak out the other side.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You're driving a semi. Just.
I would think, truthfully, it's, I would be worried that the chainsaw would go through the door.
Well, and I think, like, semis are pretty big things where you have to start them, and you have to do all these gears to get them to go. So I'm sure the guy was like, oh, it's going to be faster if we just run.
Yeah, what's that sexual euphemism about diesel engines? Takes a while to get them going, but once you get them.
Yeah.
I'm unaware of that. I don't know what that's about. I don't know what that says. I do know what that says.
I think I would have locked it up in the, because he would have had to climb up into the cab and with the chainsaw, and I feel like just sitting in there letting the fucker warm up and then trying to take off would have been a better idea, but.
I like how in Rachel's version, like, she's in there reading a book while the fucking chainsaw guy's outside.
Can you keep it down? This is a good part.
Also, who knows? Maybe the hitchhiker's body really ruined the underneath of the truck. You know, cars are sensitive machines.
Yeah, it could have been. Could have been.
The guts ripped out the guts, you know what I'm saying?
You know what I was thinking as she was driving off with the cute guy in the pickup,
mm-hmm.
and she's really? Laughing.
That's what you were thinking?
No, she was laughing and going crazy, and I was like thinking, I was like, oh, is this guy going to be crazy too? Like, what if it's the crazy cousin that came and picked her up?
Like, it's the other brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for a second I was thinking that too. Like, I don't know if I'd ever try to flag somebody down. I would just keep running.
I don't trust this. This is too good.
Well, what I think is good about that, though, is I think that the film has you on such an edge of your seat to where you're not trusting anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And even when she's saved, you're still like, oh, shit, is she actually okay or not? Or?
And we actually don't know. Maybe, you know. Some sort of weirdo anyway.
Nah, she's fine.
Okay.
So, Cruiser, what did you think of this one overall?
I mean, this wasn't my first watch, but, like, I didn't, like, every time I see this, it gets, like, grosser for me.
Really?
Like,
okay.
I'm not, I mean, like, because I mean, I know what happens and I know how it ends, so, like, I was still on the edge of my seat because it's just weird, but, like, it wasn't, like, cover my ears scare or eyes scary. It was just like, the fuck, why is everything so dirty and gross and weird, and why hasn't anyone caught these people? Scary, I think. Mm. So yeah,
Cameron, what did you think after watching this one again? Have you seen this recently or?
Oh, I the minute I got the Blu-ray, I popped that baby in.
Oh, there you go.
On the big old screen, I was like, I gotta see this for all its glory. I love it. To me, I find this movie, you know, it's interesting to watch a movie you've seen so many times again and again, but it's like, it's still super affecting. Like, that ending when she's on the truck laughing, like, a movie done well, you should feel what the character's feeling, and you're feeling that too. You're like, oh, thank God.
The ride is over.
Yeah, I'm thinking that because I'm watching it going, ugh, her poor lungs. Like, she's just screeching for, like, 25 minutes straight.
Well, like, how much money she's going to have to dole out for therapy on this is going to be ridiculous.
And her eyes are, in real life, were super bloodshot, and they don't mind doing close-ups on that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They were all fucked up, yeah. Strauss, what did you think? Since this was a first watch, like, what did you make of it?
I really liked it.
Did you?
Yeah.
All right.
It was better than the ones that I've seen before.
It was better than the sequel, which is interesting. Cameron, I really liked it as well. You know, it's one that gets better for me the more I watch it. But Cameron, what did you want to say about the sequel?
Well, the sequel to me is interesting because it's 10 years later, or actually it's 13 years after the first one. And it's, to me, it's just it's a totally different kind of movie, but it's a ride. Like, the first Texas Chainsaw, you watch maybe with a couple friends that are into horror and you watch it as like a film. Texas Chainsaw 2 is something you put on at a party.
Mm-hmm.
And you get like, Dennis Hopper has a chainsaw fight with Leatherface.
Nice.
Like, their swords.
That's pretty sweet.
The whole last act of the movie, the family now lives in, like, an underground abandoned carnival.
Yeah.
It's a hoot. I love it. It's very 80s. And what's funny is that Hooper's mindset was, like, the first film was an extreme horror film, so let's make the second film an extreme comedy, because you can't make the same film again.
Hmm.
And that's totally what it is. And the actor who plays the cook comes back to play the role again.
Oh, nice.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Which is fun. He's sadly the only returning actor. I would have liked if Gunnar Hansen could have played Leatherface again. But I think it's fun. I think it's a lot of fun. It's a very weird, strange movie. It didn't do well. Critically, it was very panned. So much so that when the third film came out, they completely ignored part two. Which I think is a shame. I think part two is totally worth checking out if, like, you're in a mood for, like, a fun Halloween movie.
All right.
The Clowns from Outer Space.
No.
Well, whereas, like, the first film is, like, about what happens to the hippies in the town. when they run into these people? The 80s film is What Happens to Yuppies When They Run Into These People.
Oh, we got some alligator shirts and shit.
There are 3D glasses this kid's wearing when he gets killed.
Yes!
That's your kind of show right there, Chris.
During the Oingo Boingo song.
Nice.
Get your boat shoes out of here.
All right, well, let's move on to our second film. This is Cameron's pick, and it is from 1977, and it is Suspiria.
Roses are red, violets are blue, but the iris is the flower that will mean the end of it.
Run from Suspiria. Suspiria. You can hide from Suspiria. Suspiria. But you cannot escape. Suspiria. The only thing more terrifying than the last 12 minutes of Suspiria are the first 92.
In a stormy night? On a stormy night, the American dancer Susie Banyan arrives in Freiburg, coming from New York to join a famous and expensive ballet school for 3 years of training. On the next morning, she is informed by the director of the school that a student she met leaving the place on the previous night was violently murdered, and the police are investigating the crime. She becomes a friend of another student, Sarah, and she realizes that the house is indeed a coven of evil witches. Had to do some editing there.
That is oh my god.
So Cameron, this is your selection. So what made you pick Suspiria?
So when the idea came out to do this, we decided we were going to do 70s and then other decades. I was certainly trying to think of a 70s movie, and I wanted to pick something because at this point, you had picked Texas Chainsaw. So I was like, okay, I want to try and pick something that is maybe also a classic, but more of like, you know, whereas like the A list of 70s classic horror films would be Exorcist, Texas Chainsaw, Halloween, you know, things like that. I was like, let me pick something on the B list. And I was between this and Don't Look Now, the Nicholas Rogue film.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to try and pick something maybe a little European.
Yeah.
And when I thought about Suspiria, I wanted to do that because it also opened up the gate to talking about, Giallo films and Giallo horror films. And that is its own genre in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And Giallo is, 70s Italian, usually extremely gory, but very, the plot doesn't so much matter, but it's very interesting, set pieces and lighting design. Almost none of the actors, but the main actor will be able to speak English. They're filmed in very much the same way that the Sergio Leone spaghetti westerns were filmed, where it's, let me get one American actor or actress, and then the rest of the roles will go to whoever I want from whatever country I want them to be from. It doesn't matter. I just want the best actor for the role. So you would cast, like, someone who only speaks German, someone who only speaks Italian, a Spanish person, whatever. And then when you would sell that movie to other countries, they would be the one person not dubbed. Because then they would be speaking their own language. So it's very much the same way that those films were made. If you watch those old Clint Eastwood westerns, they're very much the same, where Clint Eastwood is clearly saying what he's saying. And then, like, the villain's mouth is still moving once the English voiceover has stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy to get lost in that kind of stuff, but to me, I find that charming. I kind of like the idea where it's like, I'm just going to make the movie I want to make with the actors I want to make it with. I don't care.
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, for this one in particular, you know, the dubbing is a little rough, but once you realize that, oh, this is just how it is, and Susie's the one that speaks English,
yeah,
and I'll just kind of go with the fact that I'm just hearing it. I don't need to watch their mouths anymore. Because I think that the first few times you see different people and their mouths aren't matching up to the words, you're like, whoa, what the fuck? Like, what's going on? Is this a bad copy? Like, what's going on with this DVD? Like, is it not syncing right, or what? Yeah, what is it?
And I thought that she, for like a little bit, I thought that she was also speaking a different language, and they were just doing a really good job with hers. But then I was like, no, she's saying American words with her mouth.
She's talking American words. I like that, Chris.
Yep.
Good. America!
And I think for me, the reason I ended up picking Suspiria is because of all the giallo films. It's pretty much like this and Lucio Fulci's Zombie are like the top of that heap of like well-respected, well-known kind of films. And also it's interesting to talk about Suspiria because a lot of the other giallo films tend to be, it's a zombie movie, it's a haunted house movie, it's like other, usually like American genres that were then brought over, or British genres, and then done very violently. But what's interesting to me about Suspiria is that it takes fairy tales as its genre.
Mm.
And so it's little girl enters a strange and different world, and there's witches.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, so I've seen this one before. I saw this when we did a weekly horror discussion on Cameron Watches Movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd seen this. I, you know, enjoyed it at the time. I think I enjoyed it more this time. But what I'm waiting to see and waiting to hear about is what Miss Cruz thought of this one. Mrs. Z-Leg, sorry.
Why are you so on pins and needles about it?
I'm because I feel like I have a decent idea on what you think about the next one. So this is the one I'm curious about.
Okay. Well, this was obviously a first watch for me. Mm. And it was different. I didn't stop watching it and wasn't like, oh my God, what a shit movie or anything. So, on a scale of 1 to 5, I would give it maybe 3.5.
Okay.
And the thing that I liked, a lot actually about it was, the colors in it, which is a weird thing to say, I guess, but like, you know, like the room is like blue and then white, or like it has like huge flower patterns or something. And so like I was almost kind of distracted to a point where I was like, ooh, whenever like they walked into a different room.
Pretty lights.
Yeah, kind of. And you know, I watched it until the end because I wanted to see what the hell was going on. So,
sure.
You know, I was invested in this poor little American girl that had to go all the way to Germany to learn how to dance, which is ridiculous. And, you know, I was really like hoping she'd get out and was, you know, invested in her character and wondering what was going to happen to her. So, you know, it was a little, there were some weird things, but I mean, it was a 70s horror movie. So you're not really going to find a lot of cut and dry in there. So.
Did you follow my directions?
Listen to it really loudly?
Yes.
So I could hear all the soprano singing?
Did you listen to it loudly?
I guess. It was in my ears.
Okay, and the reason I said that is because I think that this film has such an oppressive musical score.
I love the Godless score.
Oh, yeah.
And so I what I was wanting to do is make sure that you weren't listening to this, like, while Brad was cooking dinner or something. You know, and you, like, had it on to where you could hear it, but it wasn't, like, real loud.
You can't let the cooking ruin Goblin.
And so I was like, because, you know, I feel like it's very clearly the point of the film with the score is that it's very loud, it's very in your face, much like the color scheme. And so I was like, this is part of the experience, is it being loud and in your face like that, and so I wanted to make sure that you did it that way.
Yeah, I know. I definitely paid attention to the music, and you know, I actually wrote down, because like she gets in the taxi at the beginning, and it's like raining and stuff.
Yeah.
And I wrote when she's in the cab with the rain. The only difference between a horror movie and a romantic movie at this point is the music.
Mm.
I would also say the amount of rain. It pours on this poor woman.
That's
in
true.
Like 10 seconds.
Yeah. It did look like Lincoln last night, actually.
Oh, yeah.
It rained five inches.
Yeah.
I think what I love about this era of horror movies, the 80s too, but so many, what I love about horror, I think in general, is like, it's almost like things that you would generally care about in narrative film, almost horror, you're allowed to go, who gives a shit? Cause you need to feel something.
Mm.
So, like to me, like I love the sequence when she gets to the school and the girl is running through the forest.
Oh,
and it's
yeah,
just
very
this
odd.
Giant white light and that tooka 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 music and the screaming. And does it make sense? Where's the screaming coming from? Why is this the music? What's going on in the plot? Where's that giant white light coming from? That is not, this film is not about realism whatsoever. It is about making you feel like eerie and something is wrong and what the hell is going on.
Yeah,
and well, differently than Texas Chainsaw, where Texas Chainsaw, you're like, this feels real and gross and hot. And I know what it's like to feel hot and sweaty in a car. And I don't like that feeling. This is like almost bordering on when you feel like feeling nauseous, being like, I don't know what I'm feeling right now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I mean, like, especially with this movie, they could have done anything over the top and it would have just gone completely in line with what they were doing.
Yeah.
So like you said, how is she hearing screaming? I thought she was having some sort of like flash forward or flashback or something, but like it totally just goes along with like everything else in the film.
Hmm. So,
and I think that allows, oh, sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to ask you, Cameron, one of the things that, you know, you and I had talked about through scheduling or whatever was that we were both pretty sure of what we thought Rachel's opinion was going to be on the film. To where we didn't think that she was going to think that highly of it. So, mm-hmm. So what do you think? Like, are you pleasantly surprised that Mrs. Zelag was like, no, this was good. I liked it.
I didn't say it was good.
Cruz, you said it was good.
I said 3.5 out of 5.
That's pretty good.
That's more than halfway good.
No, I'm happy about it. I think like I didn't know because like listening to the show, like you guys don't tend to do surrealism films,
right?
There'll be fucked up films, and I know Rachel does not like that.
Don't even say those two words right now. Let's not ruin this.
The Vanishing. but I mean, this film is fucked up, but not in the way where it's like. Going back real quick for Texas Chainsaw, because I'd be remiss not to bring this up. I like the fact that the guys never try to rape her. There's never any degree of a possibility of sexual assault on that main character.
Especially because she's very sexualized, like the two girls are.
Yeah, that one, I mean, neither of them were in bras. I don't know if anyone else
Anel said that right away.
That's the first thing I said. We talked about nipples and all that.
She's like, oh, this girl with the white pants has got weird nipples, like it's a whole thing.
I did. I know he was thinking it, but well, I'm the one that spoke.
He's like,
it.
I didn't even notice her.
Yeah, I'm only looking at you.
I love you, baby. Come on, don't
and
go.
I'm like, oh, look at her nipples. They're big. And then, it's like, okay. We can have this conversation.
Well, since you brought it up, I guess I'll look now.
Oh, yeah, dang.
But I do like that about, like, there's no even hint at the end of Texas Chainsaw. Like, no one says anything crude, like, you're going to be here a while, and, like, touches her leg or anything. Like, nothing like that. They're not interested. They don't care. That's not their goal. And in 70s exploitation, that's really rare.
Oh, yeah, like I Spit on Your Grave and those sort of movies.
Oh, I Spit on Your Grave, Last House on the Left. Yeah, things like that. But anyway, going back to Suspiria. But it's the fact that, like, I wasn't sure how Rachel was going to feel because there's nothing like that in this movie. There's no, like, you know, sexual assault or rapes. There's no like crazy things like that. It's just kind of disorientating and weird. And it's violent, but it's not like perverse violence.
Mm.
I mean, like I like a couple times, like, especially when they were sleeping all in that one room and they have like a sheet. There were a few eye rolls during that scene.
Oh, they're in the gym. Right.
Yeah, and she's like,
that reminded me, that really did, it reminded me of being, like, in preschool on a rainy day.
Mm.
Kind of, yeah. And then she's, like, telling the scary, and I was like, okay, I mean, I get what we're trying to build up. And then I obviously didn't understand the guy that she, like, randomly knows that she goes to talk about the occult with,
Udo Kier?
Udo Kier, yeah.
Who's dubbed over. Didn't need to be. I'd love it if he just had his German accent.
Yeah, that's really strange because that part does not sync well at all.
No, like she goes to learn. I mean, like it would have been, I mean, it almost would have been like better if she had found a weird book in there or like had some sort of like flash something in her head or because she just like goes to do research and happens to run by this guy who's a huge research person on the occult, and he really enjoys that.
Yeah, I think the only reason for that, I have the 3-disc set of this film because I wanted to get the score. and pretty much as far as I can tell, that scene is in there just because Argento wanted to work with Udo Kier.
Oh, there you go.
So, yeah, I agree with you. Narratively, it makes no sense. It would have been better for her to find a book in the maggot attic or something like that.
You know, that was the most troubling scene for me. To where,
let me tell you, if you watch enough Giallo films, there's a lot of maggot scenes. Maggots are the worst.
To where she's combing.
Maggot Attic, it's my new metal band.
Maggot Attic. Yeah, she's combing her hair, and there's maggots in her hair, and they go upstairs.
This is a low-budge movie, you know that was real.
Yeah, and you go upstairs, and there's just millions of them, and
in the attic, and it wasn't just on her. Like, I think that would have been weirder for me to try to deal with. If, like, she was, like, producing maggots out from under her fingernails or something.
Ooh.
But I think, like, I love, like, the instructor going upstairs and stepping on all these maggots. And you know, nowadays, if you made this movie, it'd be like, oh, yeah, we got some, like, packing popcorn and painted them and this, that, and the other. In the 70s, you know, they had someone go out there, find a bunch of maggots, dump them on the floor, and have someone step on them.
Yeah, gross.
I don't like that.
What do we think about the dog?
Ooh, I like the dog thing where you have the maid and the child and the dog kind of senses that something's not right, and then the dog they go on that walk after he's been fired, and the dog's freaking out. You know, I like that it's for this film. I like that it's more a little bit on the subtle side as to what's going on. You know, I like that it's not very blatantly, like, she's not possessing, like, she's not putting a spell on the dog or something.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And so I like that it's fairly subtle, and then the dog just like fucking...
crystal ball.
And the dog just fucking chews the guy up, and I'm like, holy shit! Like, that was another one of the parts where, especially on the rewatch, I was like, oh my god, like, that's... That was pretty effective. I really
enjoyed it. Yeah, the two violent scenes in this movie is that one, and then the girl in the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like...
Oh, where they literally stab her heart.
Yeah, they stab her heart, but for me, the thing that's creepy about it is, like, when she's screaming, but her head is sinking backwards into the ceiling, the lighting in that... It is a creepy image.
Yeah.
She's not lit in a way where she's, like, pure white, and her, like, face is screaming.
You're not bothered by the pit of barbed wire?
Oh, that is a great, great booby trap. Loved it.
Yeah, that's the kind of booby trap where it's like, it's almost like when you were a little kid and you got stuck in the couches and the blankets, like you were wrestling around with somebody and you're like, you couldn't get out.
Like, yeah.
I can just imagine her going to, like, the Home Depot of the time going, yeah, I'm going to need like 5,000 yards of barbed wire, please.
Can you fence in some cattle? Sure, whatever you need.
Yeah, why not? And then someone had to carry that upstairs. Oh, what a mess.
Yeah, during that scene I wrote, I have 100% faith she will reach the window and get out safely, like right before she dropped into the barbed wire.
Like, to me, and I think, you know, it's interesting to talk about old horror movies because there's, like, you know, that thing of, like, is this still scary? Is it still effective? I don't know if this one 100% is. It's eerie and gross. But I will say, the scene where that character comes back in the witch room in the very end is super creepy still.
Yes.
And laughing.
That was creepy. I was like, what the damn it? No.
Yeah.
Oh, and then we got to also talk about the little boy with, like, the mirror that, like, creepily smiles at the main character, and then the score hits in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
And again, what's that mean to the narrative? It don't mean shit. What's that scene make you feel? Weird and gross. That's horror.
Yeah, that's what's good, is I like having some unexplained things in there, because, you know, you have a lot of characters in this film, and you expect them all to have sort of a nice little bow, or they're all to be killed, or whatever. But a lot of them are just kind of background characters, to where their little characters don't have a full arc. It's
right.
Not like they all come back to mean something. And so I kind of like that, because it just kind of sets you off from a regular film.
And it feels also like, again, going with the fairy tale thing, the fact that main witch gets killed and her house burns down, which is very much like the Hansel and Gretel story.
Mm-hmm. Cameron, did you see that this was supposed to be 12-year-olds?
Yes, that I knew.
And then his father that was the producer said he nixed that idea.
Yeah, and they've been also, this is one they've been trying to remake for quite a while. And I think it was supposed to be the director of George Washington and Pineapple Express.
David Gordon Green.
David Gordon Green's been trying to get this remade for like, I think even since Pineapple Express, so a long time. And it was originally going to star Natalie Portman right off of Black Swan. Oh. So go from one creepy dance movie to another. And then it became long enough. He ended up hiring that actress from The Orphan.
Oh, okay. Sure.
She was going to be the lead. But now I guess like it's again on the back burner. There's all these rights issues and stuff like that. And something like this, unlike let's say Texas Chainsaw, where it's like, how are you going to remake it? Be like, make Leatherface a football player. something like this that's like surreal and weird. I feel like you could remake it as long as you like understood how much of computer effect, because they're never going to make movies without computer effects anymore. Like, right. Where do you put that? Where's practical and stuff like that? And I think what got me excited about David Gordon Green doing it is I feel like he would edge more on the side of practical.
Yeah, he would maybe use some CGI on the bat.
Because
that part was a little unfortunate.
What a great scene! I love the fact that she puts a blanket on it, and I'm like, okay, that takes care of it. And then she grabs a stool, and she's like, I'm going to kill it.
Yeah, just...
I was like, honey, you don't really think that sheet's going to do a whole lot, do you? And I was like, oh, no, she's getting... I got it. She got it.
And I love that every hit.
So that was good. I think that, you know, I didn't really flesh this out too much, but I think that this was a film that I enjoyed a lot more the second time I saw it. The first time I enjoyed it well enough, but I was almost too unsettled by it. Like, I was almost, like, a little like, whoa, what is this?
Well, there's something to surrealist cinema that I think the first time you're watching it, there is that degree. There's what's going on. It can feel disorientating. But I feel like if you enjoyed it enough to give it a second watch, you can really appreciate the artistry of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I definitely was really into it a lot more the second time and really into the music the second time, if I haven't already made that obvious.
I'll send you the score.
But I think that the third act is what loses my interest just a little bit. Like, I think the first two acts I'm really, really involved. And then once it gets to her meeting different people and getting kind of like a little bit of a battle plan, that's when I'm like, okay. Like, I still enjoy it, but it's not quite the same.
Yeah,
it becomes more plotty. Mm-hmm. Like, if someone were to be like, what are the plot beats of the first two acts? You'd be like, this girl leaves the school and she gets killed and there's a blind man and dog bites him and there's maggots. But then when you get into the third act, you'd be like, what happens? Like, well, she meets this guy and this. Like, there's a lot more plot points in the third act.
Yeah. Yep. So I don't know, but I really enjoyed it. This was unfortunately one that, people may be able to tell that Anel didn't get a chance to see.
Yeah.
But it's definitely one that I really enjoyed, and I may have to, get it on the DVD queue so she can experience it.
Yeah, there's sadly no Blu-ray of this baby.
Oof, I know, not yet. I mean, I don't know why.
Those colors would pop.
Yes, it would. Right. It'd look great.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it at some point.
Yeah. All right, well, is there anything else you wanted to say about that?
I think for me, Dario Argento as a director, I think it's worth going to check out his work and then stop in the mid-80s.
Oh, is that right?
He is somebody. He has Dracula 3D right now on Netflix. That might be worth watching in a way of being like, there's no way this is the same filmmaker, but it is.
It's like an interesting filmography experiment for us, Cameron. Are you sure this is the same guy?
It's the same guy and the same cinematographer, and you would never know.
It's going to be like when we do Friedkin and we get to Blue Chips.
Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute, this guy did The Exorcist? All right.
Oh, yeah. So, but I think like he did a lot of very interesting movies. He did a movie with Jennifer Connelly when she was younger, I think like right after Labyrinth.
Oh.
Which is also involves maggots, I think.
Yeah.
So go check those out. So pretty much look up like 80s Argento going backwards. And also Argento after this, I mean, the other thing that's worth checking out in a kind of interesting way, is he got the rights to Dawn of the Dead, for Europe. So that's why there's two different cuts of Dawn of the Dead. There's the American cut most of us know, and then there's the European cut that Argento edited. And it's fairly different. The tone is a lot darker, and he got Goblin to do the score for both. Like, Goblin does the score for Dawn of the Dead because of Suspiria.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, there you go. Yeah. All right, well, Cruz, did you have anything else that you wanted to say about this last one? Or this one?
No, huh?
Okay. Well, let's move on to our last film. It's probably, I don't know, but I guess it may not be the most famous, but I would think that it's probably the most famous. It's kind of debatable, I would
say. Yeah.
But it's from 1978. It is Rachel's pick, and it is Halloween.
Halloween night. A small American town. 15 years ago. Michael?
I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil. I think he'll come back.
Exploring uncharted territory.
Been totally charted.
Just
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason she babysits
is
to have
Halloween. Okay, Linda. Come on out.
The night Halloween. Police are called to 43 Lampkin Lane only to discover that 15-year-old Judith Myers has been stabbed to death by her brother Michael. After being institutionalized for 15 years, Myers breaks out on the night before Halloween. No one knows nor wants to find out what will happen on October 31st, 1978, besides Myers' psychiatrist, Dr. Loomis. He knows Michael is coming back to Haddonfield, but by the time the town realizes it, it will be too late. For just many people.
For just many people.
The night he came home.
That's right. Okay, so this is Halloween. Rachel, this is your pick. Give me the lowdown on why this was your selection.
So, get the low.
I'm doing sort of a theme within a theme.
You're trying. I blew it up for the next recording. Sort of.
What do you mean?
Well, it doesn't exactly follow your theme, but go
ahead. Right, you're right. But my theme is, in a horror movie, if you bang somebody, then you die. And so this was my pick because, I mean, it's pretty blatant that if you're the slutty people in the movie, then you obviously get killed.
Now, Carpenter said that that's not intentional, though.
Okay.
That's what he said. He said that it was because they were too distracted.
Sure. I say a lot of things. That's fine.
Amongst other things, you know, they were too distracted by the sex. And that's why they were killed. So what's interesting about this film is Cameron has talked about this film over at Filmographies, which is a podcast that the two of us do, where we take a director and we discuss all of their films. And this was the first director that he did, along with David Campo and Timmy Wood, of John Carpenter, So, and this was, I believe this was in his very, in your very first episode, right?
Yep, it's his third film.
Okay, and so what, so looking at it now, like, do you take anything away different than you did then? Or what is it that you, like, what do you think of Halloween?
Halloween, it might be the granddaddy of horror films. Ooh, I'm hearing myself a lot. Suddenly got very echoey. Okay. It might be the granddaddy of horror films because it, I don't know if it's perfect, but it's so subtle and it might not be as scary as it was anymore, but you look at, before Halloween, there was only like a couple slasher films. Like Psycho, Black Christmas, Twitch of the Death Nerve. That's it. This kind of popularized the genre, but it's so interesting that at the same time, it feels artistically like it stands on top of that genre as well.
Hmm. Okay.
Now that's not to say things maybe don't hold up or maybe there's some odd things here and there, but if you think about it, like, it's also hard to talk about this film as its sole thing. It's very hard sometimes to talk about a film where there have been so many sequels.
Oh, what we're going to try to do next time.
Yeah. Well, there's so many sequels and remakes and the popularity of that character. So just trying to watch this movie in its lone self and try and find the art in this lone film, ignoring everything else, it's pretty damn near perfect, I think.
Mm.
And I'll get into why in a minute.
Okay, so Rachel picked this. Cameron's already talked about it. And Al, have you seen this before? Or you said something about how your mom had showed you the sequel.
Yeah, because like when you said we're going to do Halloween and Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I was like, oh my gosh, I am so in. Those were movies that I grew up with. I was always remembered being a little bit too young watching movies that I probably shouldn't have seen. Like being rated R was not not a bad thing for me growing up.
Oh yeah. Just let it all hang out.
Oh yeah. They were like, oh, you're going to have nightmares. It's fine. Like whatever.
Oh yeah. I got that childhood.
Yeah, exactly. So you understand, whereas Rachel has rainbows and butterflies and I definitely got scared shit all the time.
I think it's hilarious that Rachel's the sheltered one.
If you would like line us up all now, you would not say that.
No way, because you go see Cruz's family like at a tailgate for a Husker game. There's no way she would be the sheltered one.
That doesn't mean she wants to watch people get stabbed in the back of Chevy.
It's true. I didn't choose this, but I had fun.
It chose me.
Right. I had fun with it though. Like my mom and I had this thing when we would watch scary movies where I could not stand the sound. That's what scared me. So I would watch and plug my ears. But she was okay with the sound, but couldn't stand seeing what was happening. So she would cover her eyes and listen. So then after...
All you needed was the monkey that closes its mouth.
I don't know. That was probably made my dad where he was like, got shunned to his room. Because,
yeah, I don't
know.
That's not your dad.
Yeah, that's not here or there. But anyway, so...
Diarrhea mouth, for
after
sure.
We would... see a scene, then we would converse with each other, like, okay, what happened? Because, like, I didn't see it, and you didn't hear it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
What's that Gene Wilder, Richard Pryor movie, See No Evil, Hear No Evil?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But, so, like, this is one of the movies that definitely was the sequel, where I thought it was the original, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved it. Like, I loved these movies growing up. Even if they weren't the original. So it was fun for me to actually watch the original, and it was better still,
yeah,
I think.
It was good.
The original was better.
Yeah. Well, that's, have we done, I guess I haven't talked about this movie before. I feel like I've watched this a lot. Like, I feel like I've seen this.
Oh, this is an AMC staple, let me tell you.
Yeah, and, you know, this is one where I didn't do this one for the movie a day thing. I haven't done a show on this one. But it's a film that I've seen several times and you know, not since podcasts have been around or anything like that. Like I've seen it maybe, I think I saw it, Cameron, after you guys did, the John Carpenter show. I think maybe I watched it then, after hearing you guys talk about it. But, you know, I think that the first thing that we need to talk about is the Halloween score, right? Like the actual Halloween theme.
Well, I think to bring up that, you got to talk about the making of this film in a big bad way, which is that originally this wasn't going to be set on Halloween. The original script was called The Babysitter Killer.
Right.
And you can kind of tell to some extent that they kind of were like, let's attach it to a holiday. Because that's sort of the stuff that doesn't 100% make sense, such as the idea that there's two young children whose parents, I guess, went to a Halloween party and were like, you two are going to hang out here with the babysitter. You ain't going trick-or-treating.
Which we're going to do.
Yeah, it's like,
Halloween is like our one night to go out and be stupid.
Yeah.
Perfect.
As opposed,
I totally get it.
The distinction, though, is that's the one night to go out and be stupid.
Yeah.
We're plenty stupid while we're just here.
True. And the second thing you could tell, they probably, it was originally not a Halloween-based script, and then they were like, oh, here's an idea, because they play with this idea in the second one, is your killer is walking around with a costume, and everyone's in a costume.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How do you find him? And they play with that in the second one, where the cops do not know who they're looking for. And it's kind of a genius move. In this one, they don't deal with that, and that's totally fine. I don't need that. I think what's great about this Halloween is that he only, if you don't count his sister in the very beginning, only kills four people.
Yeah, it's not like a modern film where they're just sliced.
It's not even like the sequels. In the sequels, he's murdering people left and right like crazy. The film only costs like $300,000, which even by 1978 standards, you basically made a TV commercial.
Right.
Wow.
With that kind of money. The William Shatner mask.
Oh, yeah. Kirk mask.
I missed that part.
This is still, I think, the best Michael Myers mask. The story, so to explain to Rachel, the story is they needed a mask for the killer. They didn't know what, so they told the prop guy or set designer, go to a Halloween store and pick up some masks. And he picked up a couple masks, and he picked up a Captain Kirk mask. So what they did was they shaved off the sideburns and painted the face white. That's the Michael Myers mask.
No shit.
Yeah, and they also
Shatner.
And they also had a clown mask, Cruz.
No,
That was like red, that had red hair.
Which makes a little sense because he has a clown mask in the very beginning.
Yeah.
He is a clown. He's a little boy clown that kills
little
his sister.
That kills his sister with huge boobs, even though she's 15.
Michael!
I'm just going to stand here while you stab me and my boobs are out. Whatever.
So do you see how huge boobs is an observation?
Well, she was naked, so.
Yeah.
She was naked. Mentioning the score, I think. We all saw them. Mentioning the score, you got to bring it up because when they previewed this film, unlike Texas Chainsaw, where Texas Chainsaw has no score and that almost makes it creepy, because this film takes place in cities we know, as a matter of fact, this was filmed in Pasadena. I could be on that street in 10 minutes from where I live, where they filmed Halloween.
And it looks like it's in the middle of June and it's supposed to be Halloween.
I believe it was the middle of June.
Probably there's no leaves.
But this was when they previewed it, people were like, oh, this isn't very effective. And John Carpenter was like, well, I haven't done the score yet. And he didn't change a single frame of the movie, went and did the score, and people, like, it drove people. People, like, went crazy for it.
Well, yeah.
And I think it's also worth mentioning, Dean Cundey was the director of photography. This is one of his first films. Dean Cundey would then go on. He was, Carpenter's cinematographer for quite a while. He then went on to be the cinematographer for Back to the Future trilogy, Forrest Gump, and Jurassic Park.
So smaller films after that.
Very, very independent. Modest.
Independent, very, indie films, yeah.
And recently did Jack and Jill, I think.
Somebody needs a check, that's fine.
And this was also one of the first films to use, the Steadicam was just invented.
Oh, yes.
So it was this and Rocky were some of the first films to use the Steadicam, and they thought, well, we have this new thing, let's really try and use it, and that's the entire unbroken opening shot.
Yeah, the POV, right.
Of going into the house, killing the sister, and going out of the house is all one shot, and that's technically impressive because reels of film were only 13 minutes. They can only last about 13 minutes, so that was an entire reel. The story is that the take they actually ended up using in the film had run out right after they yelled cut.
Wow.
Nice.
That's really cool. So with the masks, is that why Michael comes back with a mask? Is because he killed his sister with a mask originally? Is that like his MO?
I think the thing that could be assumed, it's interesting. I think the thing that could be assumed is that, like the suit he's wearing, is that I'm guessing the truck driver had that stuff.
Well, yeah, that pickup truck that he pulled over and it was a handyman.
Yeah.
So he took his clothes, but.
Because then he breaks into the Halloween store.
Oh, yeah. That's
where he gets the knife, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So is that just his MO then? Because he killed his sister in a mask and so he wants a mask?
I think, to some extent, I think the MO is basically what Dr. Loomis says, which is that, like, he's really, like, not human, that there's no empathy, that he's basically a sociopath.
Right, so he just doesn't want people to see his face.
To some extent, I think so, because, like, when Laurie rips the mask off in the very end, he puts it right back on.
Right, mm-hmm. Okay.
And what's interesting about that shot is, that's a shot John Carpenter talked about, when that shot happens, the ripping off of the mask, people in the audience went crazy, because they're like, oh my god, what's it gonna look like? And then he just looks like a normal dude.
Yeah, didn't they say that it was a good thing that it was like a fairly attractive guy. It wasn't some grotesque looking person.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it was like even more horrific that it was like, holy shit, this just could be the guy down the street or my neighbor.
My little brother.
Well, that's why to some extent you almost have to not think about the sequels to understand why this first film works, is because later on in the sequels it's revealed that Jamie Lee Curtis is actually his sister and that there was a purpose for and so like it ends up turning into like that Michael Myers had a purpose and there was a reason behind everything. And I think what makes this first film so creepy is the fact that it just seems like it's all random. He only picked Jamie Lee Curtis and her friends because Jamie Lee Curtis went up to the house to drop the key off.
That's what I asked Eric. I said, why did he obsess over her? And he was like, well, I think it was because she dropped the key off.
Yeah, it was just that's who he fixated on because that's who he saw.
That's what I
thought. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it. Well, before we get too far away from this, you had mentioned the beginning, and I love that POV shot. And I think that it's really effective because, you know, you have that sort of sense of the found footage films that we see so much now. To where you can't see everything. You have such a tight focus on what this character can see.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really like that. And I think it's really effective when he is stabbing his sister. And then you see him like look at his own hand while he's stabbing. And I think that that's interesting because it's like he's not even that interested in the killing. It's like he's stabbed her a couple times. He's like, oh, that's good. And then he just looks at his hands and he's like, holy shit. Yeah, this is what I'm doing.
Well, it adds to that kind of like curious dog element that he has when he stabs Bob and then turns his head.
Yeah.
Yeah, like back and forth.
Like, yeah, like, whoa, And I love the fact that when he gets out and they rip the mask off of him and he's just, you know, a normal looking kid. I love that slow pullback and they're all just kind of stuck. You know, it's just that still frame.
Yeah.
And nobody's like, what the fuck did you did? Like, holy shit, you know, what's going on with your knife? You know, why, you know, there's none of that. It's right. Just like, this is the scene that's changed, you know, obviously this family's life and this town. And I just think that's really effective. And that's kind of like a small little thing. Because when you think of Halloween, you're like, oh yeah, it's Michael Myers and it's the mask and he's stabbing people and that sort of thing. But I really like that little sequence.
Yeah, I think it's like bringing up the mask again. I think, and this is again because that mask is now so famous. Like, that's a very famous horror movie mask. But if you watch this first film, you don't really get a real clean, good look at that mask. A close up shot of that mask until after he kills PJ Souls with the phone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's behind glass and fog and he's in the distance and all this other stuff. And so you don't 100% make it out. Even when he kills Annie, before he kills PJ Souls, he's behind like fogged glass. So it kind of adds to that boogeyman element, that's throughout the movie. And I think that's why the ending, again, if you ignore that there's all these sequels, the ending is awesome of Dr. Loomis looking down. There's no body. And then you just hear that breathing of the mask and you have all these shots of where we've been in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which,
well, like, and he doesn't die. Like, she keeps, well, I mean, like, you know, another, you know, classic horror movie, you know, misstep where you don't stab him 82 times to make sure he's dead, but like when he sits up in the bedroom, I'm like, God, you should have done it. Like,
it was like she dropped the knife for a second time. Like, she had it first after she stabs him in the neck with a needle. And then drops it. And then she's in the closet and then stabs him and drops it. And I was like, quit fucking dropping that knife.
Quit dropping your shit.
Just slice his head off. Come on.
Or, yeah, make sure that you finish. But I mean, like, obviously that.
Yeah.
How it goes.
Fragile little 70s lady. You're not gonna.
Well, even calling her a lady is a misstep. I think she's supposed to be like 15.
That's right. True. I know.
Most 15-year-olds can barely tell what time a fucking movie starts and sit their asses down.
That's so.
Let alone go on a killing spree.
Before we talk about Jamie Lee too much, one of the other things that I really liked about it was when he's in Loomis's car and he's just kind of stalking different people, and he goes to the boys' school.
Oh, and he follows Tommy in the car in the score?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And the bullies run away after making him trip on his pumpkin. And I'm like, oh, those fuckers.
And like, he's scared a little
bit. Ugh. You know?
I love that Loomis gets those bullies later.
Yeah, that's right.
Get your ass out of here.
and he grabs the one bully. And he's looking straight up at him. And I said that I guarantee that little kid shit.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way, like, looking at this grown-ass man who's supposed to be 21, which is a little youngish, I would think, but regardless.
It says 23 in the credits.
Oh, is that what it is?
It's Michael is 23, yeah.
Oh, because I thought he was six, but then it was 15 years later.
I don't know. I'm telling you, the credits told me.
That's true.
The doctor said he was six when he first
came. Yeah, Loomis said it. It doesn't matter, I guess, but.
You do the math.
He had the blackest eyes.
You do the math.
The devil's eyes.
Yeah. And so, I really liked that the little fuckers kind of got theirs for, you know, just a second and then Loomis gets them later. Which of the deaths do you think was the scariest? Because mine is Bob by a landslide after he, you know, gets down to business with PJ Souls and then he's walking around in the hallway. And opens the wrong closet, and then he's right there, and that scares me every single time.
That one's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean that one is. I mean, like, I felt so nervous for the slutty. Well, I mean, the both of them are slutty. The non
Annie in the car.
She's in. First of all, like, people have laundry in different rooms in their house. Like, they have a laundry shed or something. Is that what's going
That's
on there?
That's a very California thing. Yeah. Yep.
Oh, okay. That's. You know, that's interesting to me.
Not Nebraska.
Yeah.
Speaking of, let me ask the ladies here. If you spill a little butter on your shirt, you get completely nude in your kitchen.
I know! Right? Was she babysitting? Is her that little kid's house?
No.
She was at her house.
I would be like, fuck, that's gonna stain, and I'd wear it.
And no bra, of course, because it's the 70s. And Brad was watching this with me, and he's like, what is she? I'm like, I don't even know. She just likes walking around with no clothes on. Granted, I understand the no pants thing, but like,
gonna say, come on, Cruz.
But I mean, I at least wear a shirt. People have to keep their dinner down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I would not strip naked, but it went well for the movie and for the time of the movie.
Yeah,
I think the reason the Annie one is effective for me is like, there's so many times where it's like you think she's a, and I think that's the other thing is the patience of this film. Like in the later sequels, Michael Myers just kills people left and right, doesn't care. This movie, it's like. You see him, like, in the background of shots. She walks past the hallway, and there he is.
Fucked up.
Oh,
she gets stuck. Like, he is, even though Jamie Lee Curtis is the star of this movie, he is stalking Annie way longer.
I think it's because of her comment that she yelled at him.
Oh, she yells at him in the car, yeah.
And so he's like, when am I going to get you, bitch? Like, I'm going to get you good.
Well, and
he only just learned how to drive recently.
Right. That was one of my other questions.
And he's really good.
That movie that we talked about, it was like, I don't know if it was last year, with Liv Tyler, where they're in the house.
Oh, The Strangers.
The Strangers.
Ooh, so
where good. You just walk by and they're standing there. That is the scariest fucking thing to me ever. Because, like, I mean, granted, like, I don't know a lot of 6-year-olds that have killed a sister and are in a mental institution somewhere, but, like, someone just being in your house while you're walking around is legitimately frightening to me. And like the shot where the little kid looks out the window and he's just standing and that across the street under that light, I'm like, God damn.
Well, there's that. Oh. And then the second version of that shot where the kid looks across the street and Michael is walking, and it's a very far, it's from the point of view of the kid, of Michael walking across the lawn carrying Annie.
Mm-hmm. Yes!
It is such a creepy shot.
And you can tell she's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least asleep, even from a child that young.
Yeah. Just the shots of him, like Brad was watching this with me, and he sticks his head out from the bushes at the beginning, and Brad's like, the fuck? Like, it's just, like, little things like that I'm like, God damn, that's scary to me. So, that's all I have.
Yeah, if it wasn't Halloween, that would obviously not be okay.
Mm.
And if it was Halloween?
No, see, that's why I think when she was knocking on the door at the end, trying to get help and screaming for help from the neighbors, and they, like, shut the...
fucking kids.
I think it's because it was Halloween.
Yeah.
So that's why people were a little bit more like, oh.
If it was Christmas, they'd be like, what? This is a fucking aggressive-ass caroler.
Caroler? I don't have anything in me.
It's like, Jesus Christ, leave me alone.
That's the version of the film I want to see.
Yeah. So I guess some kind of final thoughts, Cruz. Is there anything, you know, were you pleased with your selection? Like, looking back on it, were you like, oh, you know, I'm glad I picked that. That was really good.
Yeah, I mean, like, this was my favorite of the three.
Okay.
Just because it's still, like I said, like, even at, you know, my ripe old age right now, it was still scary to me. Like, there's just still an element of this where I watch it now and I'm still, like, I get the shivers when I see, like, certain shots of him. Like, you know, some of it I could do without, but, like, like Cameron was talking about the buildup in it. It's not just him randomly stabbing people. There's so much anticipation of, like, when the fuck is this going to happen, because it's freaking me out, that mm-hmm. I think still resonates for sure.
Yeah, it's the two scenes for me. I mean, I mentioned where Bob gets it, but it's the hedge where Jamie Lee Curtis sees him.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, you know, he's out in the middle of the day. Like, whoa, what's going on? And then it's the very famous sequence where he's in the doorway and kind of lights up.
They put a dimmer above so that they slowly turned it up so that you would see the white.
That's cool. After she sees all the dead people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The sit up is super effective too. The sit up, mostly because of that score, that dune.
Yes. Oh.
Dune, dune.
I'm like, turn around.
Yeah. So those are good. So Cameron, watching this again, talking about this one again, did you appreciate it as much, or what did you think of it?
Halloween is a film, much like Texas Chainsaw, that kind of just grows and grows in my esteem, like The Shining as well. Like, just these films where the older I get, the more I can appreciate the art of it, as opposed to just the horror of it all.
Sure. All right, Strauss, what did you think about this one, watching it for the first time?
I really liked it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Heartwarming.
It's heartwarming.
Heartwarming.
Family film.
I can't remember what the last thing I was going to say, so
all right.
You just finish and I'll see if I can remember it.
All right. Well, yeah, I really liked it as well. You know, it was one that it feels more like a film to me than the other ones. Go ahead, Strauss.
Okay, I remember. So I feel like he got really lucky because he fixates on Jamie Lee
mm-hmm.
and then follows her around, and it just so happens that she's going to babysit with her friend, and then the babysitter's friend's going to have a couple over that just want to fuck because they're trying to get away from their parents. And
let's not forget the dog.
Oh, mm-hmm. Of course the dog. Like, he gets lucky as a killer. Like, he's like, oh, people just keep walking in, and I just got to keep killing people.
I'm just going to stab everybody.
Yeah, where if he could have just had her, you know, like, it could have just been her that he was stalking. So
yeah.
I feel like he got kind of lucky being able to kill all those people.
Yeah. Lucky duck.
Lucky duck, yeah. So this is one where I feel like this one in particular, I don't know about some of the ones that we're going to talk about in the 80s, but I feel like, especially the 90s, but this one I feel like is more of a film than it is a movie. For people that know that, you know, it's more of like an artistic achievement than it is just like a shitty, cheap, scary movie.
Sure. for sure.
You know, and so that's what I really like about it, to where it's one that does reward repeat viewings. It's one that you can, you know, see different things and appreciate why it is that it scares you, much like what Cameron was saying about Texas Chainsaw. So I really appreciate that one. But do you guys have anything else to say about Halloween or any of the films before we wrap this one up? Cameron, I'll go to you first.
Another great looking Blu-ray.
Yeah, we got this was one we don't have. We have the Texas Chainsaw one, but we got this one on disc, and it's pretty. It looks good.
They just put out a massive box set, but if you don't want to spend $100 to get all the films, there's the 35th anniversary edition that just came out last year. That's great.
Oh, okay. Yeah. See, we just got the Netflix Blu-ray, so I'm not sure. I'm assuming that's not the newest one.
I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? Cruiser, what about you? Do you have anything else to say about these films?
I liked all of them in their own way.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm glad that we picked the ones we did. Nothing old boyed me on this. So I'm pretty proud of that.
You know what? You need to make a shirt.
That's right. We need to get a little store made.
All I'm gonna say is it's just gonna say four letters to say FUOB on it.
It's like that one didn't old boy me. And then right. I have a thumbs up on the back.
Yeah, that's the cue.
And they're still, I mean, like they all still have elements of being like super creepy even after all these years. Like I finished Halloween. I was watching Halloween and my mom had gotten off a plane and was driving home, and we have like a thread text for our whole family. So she texted everybody at like 12:45 that she was home, and I nearly pissed the bed because I was like watching this, and I'm like, you know,
as you do,
right?
Well, you shouldn't make your text tone the Halloween theme,
right? It was on vibrate even, and it was like made it like a really loud noise, and I was like, so
you know, I am glad that we picked these three. I think that what I think Cameron did a good job of is I think that there are a lot of films that he could have picked for the 70s that you would have really found distasteful.
I believe it.
And so you may have had a problem with, so I think that the one that he did pick, you know, was maybe like boundary pushing a bit, but I think that it turned out well. So I was glad to see that that was the film.
You hear that, Rachel? You're welcome.
Thank you.
There you go. Strauss, what about you? Do you have anything else to say about these three films?
Well, I definitely appreciated Cameron's educational points
on
all of the films, so thank you.
Dropping the knowledge is what she said.
Oh,
that's what I do. I get paid nothing.
Yeah, well, I still appreciate it. I definitely will look at the films different. I love them now, seeing the originals. Like, I loved them when I first saw them when I thought they were the originals.
Yeah, when you saw the sequel thinking it was the first one.
Right, but now I love them even more. So now it's like I can't wait till Anna gets to an age where I can start scaring the living shit out of her.
Which is show her the sequels first.
Yeah, and then I will show her The Light after.
That's true.
Oh, you're funny.
I'll probably 2 years. 8? Is that good?
No, we're good. We're good at 6. I mean, we'll talk about...
Now is the time.
Yeah, we'll talk about why...
No, then she'll live in our bed.
That's not good. We'll talk about why.
It's a rites of passage of childhood horror movie watching.
That's true. In our next episode, we'll talk about a film that was shown to me maybe when I was 6, which is why it's maybe my pick. So wrapping this one up, if you have any comments for the show or movies you'd like to hear us talk about, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @PlainLabelPod, where you can follow me. I'm @EricWilliams79, and Cruz is @LadyZleg, which is kind of confusing because I call her Cruz all the time. We also have a Facebook page where you could like the show. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. You could also, I guess, friend us over there. I haven't said that in a while. I usually skip that part.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed the show and you wanted to help us out, you could head over to our website, which is plainlabelpodcast.tumblr.com. And you're going to find an Amazon little box over on that right-hand side. If you click on that box, it'll take you to Amazon's homepage. And what I want you to do is bookmark that page, delete your old bookmark for Amazon, and just use this one. And what it does is it helps us out by giving us some of the money from Amazon. It doesn't change anything for you. It just helps us out a little bit. It pays for our movie tickets. It pays for our Netflix, etc. So I do want to thank both NL and Cameron for coming on the show. If people wanted to hear more from you guys, where could they find you? Cameron, go.
You can find me at twitter.com/JurassicAlien. As for other shows, Karen watches movies. I'm about to record a summer report card wrap-up kind of thing, talking about a lot of movies that came out in the summer that I didn't get to do shows about. And as of this show's release, if you go back in the filmography speed, I would have just released Jonathan Glazer with myself, Eric, Timmy, and Dave talking about Sexy Beast, Birth, and Under the Skin.
Uh-huh.
Ooh, those were good.
Those were good, and I'll watch those along with me. And then we are currently in the William Friedkin zone.
We're about to hit Exorcist.
Yes.
Oh,
we're going to talk about
just
that. Watched. Yeah, we're going to talk about that soon. So, Ms. Strauss, if people wanted to find you, where could they do so?
At Annelle Elizabeth.
Yeah, at Annelle Elizabeth. I've said before, she's better at Twitter than Cruz. So
oh,
if you want
so bad at Twitter. I don't even
just
know.
A few days better.
She's maybe got it figured out a little bit better. But anyway, so thank you.
Make it sound like you post news stories days before Rachel gets to
That's right.
Yeah, you're like, hey, Rachel, check your Twitter.
Check out. Drink this fireball shot, now check your Twitter.
Mm.
You've got like 75 notifications. Look at it.
Check them tweets.
That's right. All right, well, thank you for listening. And we'll actually be back next week with a look at some 80s horror films.